Welcome to the Become Nomad podcast, whether you're already a nomad or aspiring to become one. We're here to supply you with relevant information to help keep you on the road while constantly running away from winter. I'm sending you my regards from Minsk in Belarus, and I'm currently in my favorite park, very close to home, a very wild park with no organizations, simply a natural mess, which I really enjoy. It's currently raining, which is kind of weird because it's July and it's the height of Belarusian summer. But I'm really having bad luck with the winter recently. I can't really escape it. So today's topic is going to be a continuation of what we've done before, which is basically insights and lessons that I've learned while moving between locations that are connected to the location where I've been. So just a quick reminder on the last episode in this topic, I covered five locations that were, if I'm not mistaken, my first nomadic locations: Israel, India, Buenos Aires, Paraguay, Peru, and Barcelona. And the main things that I've learned while staying in those locations. And today we're going to continue with some more locations, the locations that followed after that, the lessons that I've learned about the nomadic life, a little bit about myself as well. So I hope you find it enjoyable and that the rain will not keep us from recording. I'll just say as a general note that one of the things that I've understood on the path is that there is no right way of doing things. Both the nomadic lifestyle and life in general, each one of us has to find their own path. So I hope that those insights and lessons that I've learned are not going to be a copy-paste for you, but simply an inspiration to try figuring out what are the things that work for you best. And without further ado, let's start. Enjoy. Okay, so as mentioned before, today we're going to talk about additional insights that I've gathered while changing between places connected to each place. Just a quick reminder, the last time are my five first nomadic locations and the major insights. Some of them were the importance of slow travel, both on your business and especially on your sanity and your happiness. The importance of co-working, for example, and many more small lessons that I recommend hearing again in the relevant episode. I think it was about episode number 26 or 24. So do check it out on your favorite podcast player. And today we're going to continue to some more locations and some more lessons. So just a quick reminder, our last location that we discussed was Barcelona. Now I'm going to switch to the next one, which is still in Spain, Granada. I've spent 1 month and a half there. And I have to say that in general, I connected to Granada, which is in Andalusia, in the south of Spain, a lot more than to Barcelona. For some reason, I find myself connecting a little bit more to the periphery of a country, other than its biggest success stories in the style of Barcelona. And Barcelona is an amazing success story. Granada is more simple, a little bit more authentic, and in general was more fun for me. So one of the insights that I've had in Granada is that basically a country that has an economic crisis is a paradise for digital nomads and nomads in general, especially if you're working online. I'll give a few examples of incredibly high value in the past that I've taken, let's say, use of or enjoyed. Some of those countries were Argentina. In the height of their crisis, I think it was in 2003. It is no longer the case. Argentina is no longer a cheap country. Other countries would be Greece, which I will discuss soon, Spain, that was very much cheaper because of the crisis when I traveled, and I couldn't have done the same things I've done there if I would arrive 2 years before. And recently the Ukraine, Belarus and Moldova, that have also experienced a very steep devaluation, which allows you to improve your quality of life. So again, the lesson here is kind of that as a digital nomad, picking the locations that have gone through some kind of economic reset makes a lot of sense. Instead of picking the most successful and hyped locations there are, actually tuning into the news and seeing where are places that provide very high value in comparison to the past that have changed dramatically makes a lot of sense. I would just say that over here you have to be also careful and not run to countries that are dangerous. For example, I would definitely not recommend going to Syria now, although it's crazy cheap. So the idea is to find locations that still have the stability, the balance, but suffer the some kind of economic shock, which makes it a lot better for you. And by the way, also helps a lot the local economy to rebound, because that's the process that actually happens whenever a place is becoming cheap. Tourists and investments are making it once again balanced and in the right price. So being a part of this process is also fun and also contributing a little bit. So that's the first lesson in Granada. And I would say that something interesting that I've done in Granada is that I haven't stayed in the city itself for a month and a half, but I actually stayed in a hostel and did Airbnb in a village very close to Granada. Not so close, it was about 30 minutes of drive in the middle of amazing nature. The village name is Kentar, and I hope the hostel still exists. It's a very interesting hostel run by a German family, a good atmosphere, and I totally enjoyed it. And the lesson over here is that you shouldn't always aspire, especially if you stay on the long run, you shouldn't always aspire to stay in the city center or in a centric location or even in the city. Economically, and more than everything, spiritually and nature-wise and fun-wise, it makes a lot of sense to go well into the outskirts of a city or to a village outside of the city, as long as there is a public transport. Of course, the only problem here is the public transport, that it ends usually at 10 o'clock at night or 11. So you feel a little bit like Cinderella, that you're always in a race against the last bus. And some of the times I even stayed sleeping in Granada in my co-working space because I missed the bus, and that's part of the experience. But staying in a small village while enjoying the benefits of a big city close to the village makes a lot of sense. And this is something I want to do a lot more of. So Kentar was absolutely an amazing village. And the last lesson is something that is quite obvious, but I will repeat again. It was also relevant for South America and Barcelona. Basically, I speak fluent Spanish, and once again, I've discovered that knowing the language allows you connections in levels that are unparalleled. So the comparison between someone that knows the language and doesn't know the language on happiness, on connection with the locals, with the understanding of society and so on, is immense. It makes a lot of sense to either learn the language where you go to or pick a location that you know the language, because it simply opens up new opportunities that would not exist otherwise, and connections to people that you would not be able to connect to if you wouldn't know the language. So that was Granada, a really cool city in a really cool country. And what I've done after Granada is that I've went to London. So just a quick introduction. England has always been my dream for various reasons. Since I was young, I was watching English TV. I really enjoy English humor and so on and so on. So it was always in the back of my brain that one day I'm gonna settle down in England. And actually, I was a little bit worried before I arrived to London. I kind of told myself, wow, Ellie, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the end of the nomadic lifestyle because you're arriving to the place of your dreams. Luckily, it was not the case. London is totally different from what I imagined England to be. It's very international, multicultural, and so on and so on. Very fast, very work and money oriented, and so on. So it wasn't really the classic England that I was expecting or seeing on TV. And that was kind of, I have to say, that was kind of a disappointment for me. But kind of a sweet disappointment of a surprise as well. And again, those things happen all the times. The places where you think are going to be the best places for you are not. And the places where you think are boring are the places where you connect best. And we're going to talk about this also about in connection to the next locations. So that was London, a little bit of a disappointment on the connection. There might be a reason for that. The idea is that I arrived to London on a very tight budget. And I would like to say that there are some places that if you're on a very tight budget, there is no reason for you to live in. And London is an amazing example because London is a very expensive city. If you're going to go there to one of those places like London and Zurich and you're on a budget, your quality of life is going to be smashed to pieces. I've spent a month in London in dormitory rooms with 16 other people, feeling a little bit like zombie, going to lunch and dinner in fast food chicken restaurant. That was back then when I wasn't a full vegetarian. And the idea over here is even if you like a place, try to always think about, can you afford a place? And again, as a digital nomad, someone who makes money online, it doesn't make a lot of sense to settle down in a place that is very pricey, especially if you're not working there. Okay, and again, the idea over here is that as a digital nomad, you kind of make use of the arbitrage working online, while picking the location that has low cost, and that allows you to have some kind of an abundance mindset. And I didn't have an abundance mindset in London, and that might be the reason of why I didn't like the city so much, because when you're in a scarcity mindset of constantly thinking about prices and so on, you're not really enjoying it. So that makes sense. Now, one of the other insights that I've received, which really connects to the money topic, is that surprisingly, I live on the same budget more or less. It doesn't matter if I'm in Bosnia or in London. So in London, I'm going to spend more. But if let's say London is about five times more expensive than Sarajevo, in my opinion, and I'm going to spend about 1.5 times more, not 5 times more. So the idea is that the budget is more or less very strict and you kind of spend the same amount of money. That's surprisingly what I found. Wherever I am, the only things that vary wildly is the quality of life. So if in London I'm living in a 16-dorm room, having fast food once a day and constantly checking prices and walking and not even using public transport, in places like the Ukraine, I'm going to rent in the same budget the best apartment in the city center and going to have sushi meals in restaurant every day, and it's going to be even less of a budget. So again, the budget doesn't change a lot. We as people, as responsible people, are always tuning into the budget that we have. The quality of life changes dramatically. So that was kind of a surprise insight for me. And maybe the last lesson from London, which is very, very positive, is that business-wise, being in an economical hub makes a lot of sense. The opportunities that you have in a place like London, if you are building something relevant, and I have two businesses, I have an online language school and a global startup ecosystem map. The ability to connect to high profile people, to create meetings that make real difference, to go to meetups, to meet the local ecosystem of business, is absolutely amazing. And if I compare it to other places, for example, where I am now in Minsk, your possibilities, if you have the connecting mindset and networking mindset in London, are amazing. But that simply means that if you stay there, you have to work on big things or things that matter. And this is something that I noticed, that it has a lot of advantages being in a business hub. If you're the type who is a hustler that is constantly pushing into making connections and creating synergies, so that's a very big plus for cities like London. After London, and I had a short visit in London because I was actually planning to stay at least for 3 months in England, and I've stayed there for only a month. I would like to say that I made probably a mistake, which was picking the capital city. In retrospect, if I would go back to England, I would probably pick a place like Bristol, Manchester, Portsmouth, and so on, where the life costs are going to be, would have been a lot cheaper, and probably my experience would have been a lot more of authentic England. But you live and learn. Now, after London, I went to... I couldn't go back to Schengen because I maxed out my Schengen visa in Spain, and I picked a location out of Schengen, and there started my, flirting with East Europe and non-EU countries in the Balkans. So I've went to Zagreb in Croatia. So what can I say about Zagreb? A lot of good things and maybe some not so good things, but basically in the core of it, sometimes your soul connects to a place in a very, very surprising way. Zagreb has a reputation of being one of the most boring cities in Europe. And I have to say that for me, it was amazingly interesting. It was kind of my first encounter with East Europe. And I know that Croatia is not considering itself as East Europe, but for me, it was always West Europe, Spain, England, and so on. So it was really the first encounter of something that was, of a place that was actually influenced by communism and the Cold War, and still have a little bit of authenticity of East Europe in it. So I don't know if it was that or for any other reason, but I totally connected with Zagreb, with the city. It seemed like something that I would know from Israel about 20 years ago. It felt good. It simply felt good. And there was a very, very deep connection in the basic feeling that you are in a place and you tell yourself, I'm happy I'm here. And that doesn't happen in all the places. It actually happens in about half or even less than the places where I stay. So that was a very, very deep connection that I enjoyed. Now, one more good thing that happened in Zagreb, that socially things fell into a place in the meaning of a community. So if I remember correctly, last time we talked about Asuncion and a community that was formed in the hostel where I was staying with tourists that stayed on the long term. And basically the same thing happened in Zagreb. I stayed in a hostel, and the people who stayed in the hostel with me were a little bit long-term, usually locals. And we connected very, very fast with the owner and with the current people who stayed in the hostel that were part of a really interesting group. And also they had a coffee shop downstairs, and the owners of the coffee shop became my best friends as well. So again, the forming of a community in a place is crucial to your happiness. And when you do find a community in a place, and it can be a group of friends, it can be the people in your hostel, but something that is a little bit larger than two people hanging out, but something a little bit bigger, it makes you feel like you're part of something, which is probably important when you have a nomadic lifestyle and you feel like you keep on resetting and you're on your own. Having those periods in life where you're part of something makes you a lot happier. That's basically the community aspect. And by the way, I'm just thinking to myself that I want to work more on this community aspect and try finding it in every place where I stay. Unfortunately, it is not so easy, but I'm trying to figure out the best way of doing that. One more thing that is unique for Zagreb is that it was basically my first European winter. And by European winter, I mean extreme low temperatures and snow. I think it was the winter of 2013, it was or 2012, and it was extremely snowy. And I have since then some kind of a love-hate relationship with the European winter. It is very harsh, but it is also very beautiful in a way. So I'm still trying to figure out exactly if I want to be in winter in a place or not. And that was the first experience I've had with a season of the year that I've never seen how intense it is before I have arrived to Zagreb. And maybe the last thing that I discovered in Zagreb, so basically I'm originally from Israel, and I think that one of the things that was expected on my side when I started this nomadic path is to slowly lose the connection that I've got with my home country. And it's a very unique story, as you know, the nation of the Jewish people and so on, with everything that has happened in the Holocaust. I surprisingly, this didn't really happen during my nomadic journey. I can say that maybe in some aspects, my connection with my country have become even stronger. One of the things that shaped this relationship and is basically a little bit of anti-Semitism that I've encountered in surprisingly high levels in Croatia. I don't know if I was unlucky or that was basically the first place where I've been when it's so apparent. And encountering this kind of makes you understand that although you're taking a nomadic path and you're kind of playing a role of being a world citizen, there are bigger things in play. And the connection to your home country is some kind of a backup plan or a secure place when the world goes crazy is incredibly important. And this is something that facing those instances of anti-Semitism in Croatia made me understand a lot deeper. And by the way, it's not only a thing that I've encountered in Croatia, it's a little bit prevalent in all of East Europe. A little bit surprising for me, I have to say. And again, the major intake over here is how it shaped my relationship with my home country, which should not have been that important if you're taking into account the lifestyle that I've had, that I have, a nomadic lifestyle, but it is. So that's the irony, I guess, of life. Moving on to two small locations where I've been after Zagreb, that would be basically Belgrade and Sarajevo. I've been in total in both of them 1 month, 2 weeks each. And one of the things that I've discovered is, first of all, that again, without co-working, and I didn't really have a stable co-working space in any of those locations, it's very hard to stay long-term. Which means that if a place doesn't have a co-working, for me, I'm not going to stay more than a week. Other than that, I would like to say specifically about Serbia and Bosnia that Yugoslavia as a whole, and by the way, Croatia is also part of Yugoslavia, of course, has always been interesting for me. Since I was a small kid, then I was watching basketball games of Maccabi Tel Aviv against the giant, talented player of the ex-Yugoslavia. So for me, it was always an interesting country, and the disintegration of Yugoslavia was something that I wanted to understand more deeply, and now I do, after spending a lot of time in those countries. In total, altogether in Croatia, Serbia and Bosnia, I've spent about, I think, 5 months. So it's kind of a very preferred and interesting location that I enjoy. Another lesson from Serbia and Bosnia and the story of the war in Yugoslavia is how geopolitics issues and wars can actually separate between the same type of people. Because honestly, after staying a lot in Croatia, Serbia and Bosnia, I didn't really see a difference between the people. They were all kind of looked the same, kind of had the same mentality, but you see how a big event happening can really separate nations, which was quite interesting and can totally change mindsets how one nation is more oriented toward the EU, other nation is more, for example, in this case, Croatia and Slovenia, and other nations are more oriented into not liking the EU and feeling betrayed, and in this case, for example, Serbia, betrayed, manipulated. So it was interesting to see how countries and people that are kind of the same are breaking apart so easily, and how the wounds of war are staying for a very long time. Very interesting countries, which I recommend visiting. I've also rediscovered again while being in Sarajevo, one of my favorite cities, by the way, Sarajevo. I discovered that I really connect to Middle Eastern and let's say a Mediterranean mentality and so on that you can find in Istanbul, in my country, in Israel, and in Sarajevo. So it was nice. In a way, I was feeling a little bit at home in Sarajevo, or connected to my roots, because my grandfathers are from Iraq and Libya. So it was nice to actually reconnect to a lot of things that apparently are deep inside of me in Sarajevo. Moving on to the next locations that are both of them in Greece, and we're going to end today's, let's say, presentation with those. The first one is Athens. So again, Athens is a big city, a touristic city, and again, I discovered that big cities, touristic cities, and usually capital cities are not really for me, especially if they're big and touristic. So Athens was once again a reminder that those are not the places where I want to be. Those are not the places where I feel good, where I feel at peace. And it would take me a few more capital cities to totally understand and close this chapter in a way. So one of the things that I've learned in Athens, that is, even if you're in a place that you don't really enjoy that much, it is very, very important to have a place to run to on the weekends. In Athens, Athens has a very big port called Piraeus, and every weekend I would run away from the hustle and bustle of the city to my island. My island was only 1 hour a boat ride from Piraeus. The name is Aegina. A beautiful island. I would keep on coming back to it. All my Greek friends kept on making fun of me that there are so many islands in Greece, and I keep on running back weekend after weekend to the same place. I did it for a few reasons. More than anything, I really didn't have time to explore new islands that are far away from Athens, and I just found peace there, and I felt like this is exactly what I need to break my weekly routine in Athens. So Aegina is a place that I miss a lot, and it always recharged me on the weekend so I could have a good week of productive work in Athens. In Aegina, I've also discovered that the good life really exists, and the good life for me is a place, an island with a sea around it and some beautiful mountains. So hopefully I'm going to spend more time specifically in those places. One more thing that I've done in Athens for the first time is Airbnb, while sharing an apartment with someone else, having my own room, which was an experience that I keep on repeating since then. The idea is that instead of jumping between locations in your city while you stay there, for example, from one hostel to another, or leaving on the weekend and coming back and so on and so on, the stability of having a long-term rent of 1 month, which is not so long-term but is long-term for nomads, gives you a lot of energy to basically get some work done. So this solution of renting a place for a month makes a lot of sense, especially if you're in a pressured period in life with a lot of work and so on. So that was the first place where I've tried it, Athens, and it was working out great. I moved on from Athens to another city in Greece called Saloniki. So Saloniki, just like Zagreb and Asuncion, was one more case of an instant hookup of the soul with the place, an unexplained one. Some people do not like Saloniki. I totally love it. It's a nice Mediterranean city. You have the seaside close to it, and the old city of Saloniki has a lot of history, and you just have to climb a small hill and you're there. again, an unexplained connection that happens, and when it happens, you're incredibly lucky. A thing that I've discovered about Saloniki and about in Saloniki is that reading a book about the place where you are can really upgrade your experience there. So while I arrived to Saloniki, I've received a book about the history of the place, which I've amazingly enjoyed. It gave me a lot of context of the history of Saloniki since the days of the Romans up to the current days, everything that he's been through. So those are things that I would never know. Even though I read the history section of Lonely Planet, if you really want about a place where I go to, if you really want to understand the mindset of a place and the real history of what happened, reading a book about it makes so much sense and gave me a lot more context as I was walking through the city, the old town of Saloniki, just to think of all the history that it had with the Muslim population that got deported, the Greeks that got also deported to Turkey and came back, the Jews that were there and perished in the Holocaust and so on. The different layers of history and what happens in the city are simply amazing and incredibly interesting. So picking up a serious book and reading a little bit while staying in a location makes a lot of sense. Another thing that I've learned about in Saloniki is that having a good friend in the city really upgrades your experience. So basically, I have a really good friend in Saloniki whom I keep on visiting when I can. And having someone that is a good friend and not just a casual friend, someone that you spend time with and you go to coffee with and you trust and you can tell about your life to this person and so on, gives you a lot of feeling of, again, belonging. And we talked about this when we talked a little bit about the community aspect. So having a good friend in a city is something that I totally recommend and I really want to do more of. And not only that, on the emotional side, it also opens up amazing possibilities because this friend probably knows a lot about the city, can take you around to places and so on and so on. You can meet their family. So it makes a lot of sense to try to build those relationships while you're on the move. And from my experience, those relationships are staying with you also where you're out of the city. And really, I'm really trying recently to build a network of people that I can revisit and can visit me. And those people and the community that you forge as you live the nomadic lifestyle, as you move from one place to another, is really a great boost to your happiness and offsets some of the disadvantages of this lifestyle, which is basically a little bit of loneliness and reset of your social life as you travel. So that's basically it. Those are the lessons from my next locations. We're not done yet. We're only 2.5 years into the nomadic lifestyle. And as you know, I've been doing it for 6 years. So we're going to have a few more episodes, at least two, about the next locations and the insights I've gathered in each of those. You're going to have the show notes of this on the blog on becomenomad.com. So you're welcome to go there. It's probably going to take a few more days to update after you read it. So get back to the blog 1 week after and you'll see it. You can always register to our newsletter on the blog to get some updates about where I am currently and what I'm up to. If you can leave a review on iTunes for this podcast, it would be incredibly amazing. We still have 0 reviews. Amazing. So that would be appreciated. And that's basically it for today. I'm gonna try escaping the rain right now since I'm in a park, and I wish you an amazing weekend. Have a good one. Bye-bye.